I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save for Councillor Butler, who is away for personal reasons.
Thank you. So just a few announcements. The first is that prior to Christmas, this community recognized two individuals who received Sovereign's Awards. Those are national awards given to individuals who show a particular dedication and commitment to their communities. And neither one of them wanted to make a big publicity deal about it, but they're remarkable women, and I feel an obligation to at least recognize them publicly. It's Colette Woolley and Corrine Nanticoke, who received those awards in December. I also wanted to mention that on our website, there's a reference to the Roy T. Adams Annual Award, so that if there are individuals that you think may be probably recognized for their work in the community as seniors, this is an award that perhaps you should bring to the attention of those who recommend and provide that award. Third thing I wanted to mention is that there's an open house for the South End Secondary Plan, and that's going to take place on Thursday, February the 2nd at Douglas Heights Senior Center between 5 and 7 p.m. And that's to deal with matters relative to what is called the South End Secondary Plan area, which essentially is from the Niagara Boulevard on the east over to, looks like Thompson Road, is it? Councillor Passero, Thompson Road on the west? Gilmore Road on the north. Looks like the Queen Elizabeth Highway on the south.
Concession
Road. So that's February the 2nd at 5 o'clock at Douglas Heights. Also, I wanted to mention that Meals on Wheels recently recognized retirement of their executive director, longtime executive director, Nancy Ryan, and we wish her well in the future. And then when we get to public meetings, we have, this is item number 6 on our agenda, there will be a presentation from Keegan Jennings here, so we'll get to that shortly. There is no addendum to the meeting this evening, the agenda. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? I have one disclosure that I will make. It's not really pecuniary in nature, but nonetheless, it could be construed as a conflict, and that's with respect to the delegation by Ed Firetag of the Lions, who's a member of the Lions Club, and he's here on behalf of the Crystal Ridge Community Center. So I will not be participating in that when we get to that portion of the agenda. That takes us into public notice of upcoming meetings. We have our fourth budget meeting scheduled for January the 25th, Wednesday, at 2000, and that's with respect to the general levy operating budget and assessment analysis. If necessary, there will be a fifth budget meeting on Wednesday, February the 1st. Those meetings are held at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers at Town Hall. On January the 23rd, 2017, we'll be considering the bylaw for the water and wastewater budget and rates. And if things go according to the plan, the general levy budget bylaw will be presented on Monday, February 27th, 2017. There's also a public meeting with respect to the property rezoning relative to 4099 Niagara Parkway. And I should point out that although the public notice that appears on our agenda makes reference to proposing to rezone that property from waterfront residential WR zone to a site-specific waterfront residential WR zone, it's actually being proposed that it be changed to a site-specific residential zone. That takes us then to public meetings, and the only public meeting this evening is with respect to the Building Code Act and proposed increase in building permit fees. Good evening, Mr. Jennings.
Well, this is the public meeting for the requirement of the Ontario Building Code Act in relationship to modifications to proposed permit fees increases will help the building department bring them closer to cover the anticipated cost. As for public notice, the newspaper, Fort Erie Times, there was an ad put in that for December 15th. That ad did meet the requirements the town has for providing notice under the Building Code Act. As for the council approved measures, notice was posted on the town website, and the notice was sent to our local contractors. Was sent to our local contractors as well as the Home Builders Association. So why do we have an increase in permit fees? The Building Code Act does allow the municipalities to collect fees to represent the anticipated costs for the administration of the Building Code Act and the regulations. In 2015, the permit fees did have an increase, and at that time, Council did approve an annual CPI increase, which is consumer price indexing. The original permit fees came into structure in the past, but in 2006, there was a formal study done by BMA Managing Consulting, where they recommended receiving annual increases. In 2006 to 2011, there were zero increases in the rates. So there was a five-year where the fees did not change. So just based on our CPI indexing, that was a loss of about 13.6%. So in 2015, we did a 10% increase. 2016, we had the CPI increase that was previously approved at council, and that was at 0.9%. And in 2017, we are proposing that CPI index again for 1.8% for the majority of our fees. There are a few fees that I'm proposing that have a little bit higher increase. You can see on the chart here, the first is our proposed fees for 2017, the current fees under 2016's budget, and then it has the regional average. So you can see on the far right, it shows the percentage increase, which is the CPI index of 1.8% plus an additional 3.2% to give a total increase of 5%, only on these selected fee categories. So that is for assembly type buildings, care and treatment occupancies, residential buildings, office, mercantile. Public pools works out to 4.82%, and in-ground pools works out to 4.63%. Another proposed change is just in the way the fee is presented. It has to do with the release of the building permits from agreements. Currently, it's a $222 fee plus the registration costs, which works out to $300. We would just like to present that as a total fee of $300. Just so you're aware, there was a report in December that talked about the fee increases, proposed fee increases. The assembly rate was reported in that report at $1.45 a square foot, and that's an incorrect fee. That had to do with the way it was rounded through the computer program, and same with the mercantile rate. It is $1.13. It was reported at $1.14 a square foot. And next has to do with communication towers. The Ontario Building Code does not regulate communication towers any longer. That was removed out of the realm of the building code, so it is proposed to have that fee eliminated. The next section had to do with our expedited fees. The expedited fees were brought in last year. That was an offer that was provided. We're looking at renaming that fee. Expedited fee has had some misunderstandings of how it's been dealt with in the industry. So we're looking to rename that to an after-hours service. And that more reflects what that covers. It covers staff time to work after hours to process those permits. Current fee is lesser of the three times the building permit fee, or $750. During the process of this review, we did have an opportunity to review the different categories of the fee. So we're proposing to introduce a new single-family dwelling fee. So that deals for new houses, renovations, or additions to houses. So instead of being $750 or three times the fee, it would just be a flat fee of $500. And same with minor projects, where the minimum building permit fee applies, that fee would only be $250 instead of three times the minimum fee. The $750 fee would still apply to any other category of building permit. So as I mentioned already, the permit fees do represent The proposed fees are proposed to represent an annual fee increase of the consumer price index of 1.8%. And the fees go to continuing towards that cost neutral goal for the building department. So next steps is for the fee bylaw to be presented to council, which is proposed to go on January 23rd, which is next week. That's everything I have for my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Jennings? So just for clarification, then, the increases that exceed the consumer price index are based on the effort to make those cost recovery?
That's correct. And keep it in line more with the regional average as well.
Okay. Any other questions? If none, thank you very much, Mr. Jennings. That then takes us to the consent agenda. There are two reports in that agenda. Sorry. Called a public meeting so that members of the public can actually comment and give councillors advice. That's what happens when you take a break. Are there any members of the public who wish to address council with respect to the proposed increases in permit fees? Come forward, Mr. Coutts, and give us your name and address, please.
Good evening. My name is Charles Coutts, K-A-U-T-Z. 3247 Thunder Bay Road. I just had a brief question. They mentioned the communications towers is now deleted.
Right.
And my question is there no permit necessary now, or is the permit just no cost for the permit?
We can't issue a building permit. We're not authorized to issue a building permit with respect to that kind of construction because it's ruled by federal regulation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anyone else who wishes to address council on this? If not, Madam Clerk, may I now close the public meeting? Okay. All right. Then that takes us to the consent agenda items. There are two reports. Does anyone, any member of council, wish either of those reports removed from the consent agenda? If not, then can I have a mover for the items? Councillor Zanko? Are there any questions or comments with respect to either of those reports? I'd raise some questions with Mr. Lustig with respect to certain aspects of this, and I take it those will be dealt with by staff in dealing with the province?
Yes, Your Worship, they will be.
Thank you. There are no questions, then. All those in favor of the items in the consent agenda? And opposed, that is carried. That then takes us to Planning and Development Services, and I will hand the chair over to Councillor McDermott.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now in session. We'll deal with 8.2, Town-initiated amendment to the Town's official plan and comprehensive zoning bylaw number 129-90 for Bowen Road, former lands, PDS 03-2017. Could I have a mover? Councillor Passero? Are there any comments or questions? Your Worship.
I had a question with respect to how this ties in with the industrial land strategy that we're currently working on, in the sense that it's not currently within the industrial land inventory, but it's proposed that it be put in. I know it was previously.
Mr. Walsh?
I can deal with that.
Mr. Brady?
It's a very small parcel, and what it's looking for, the Bowen Road area, what it's looking for is some dry industrial uses. Dry industrial uses are not really a focus of the industrial land strategy.
And then just a follow-up to that, if there is services extended out to land to the west of this, is there a possibility that this part of Bowen Road could end up being involved in that service extension? Or is that too far beyond them? I know that there's some type of master plan work being done on that. I wonder if Mr.
Brady?
Walsh.
The answer to that question is it would be dependent upon the size of the infrastructure that's put in place. But certainly whenever we put infrastructure in place, we attempt to make sure that areas that can drain into it will be able to do so.
Okay, thank you.
Do I have further comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Carried. Thank you. Moving on to PDS 04-2017, non-rooftop solar panels procedure for council support. Councilor Zanko, are there any comments or questions? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support staff's recommendation of option two as listed. I think this is exactly the framework that we need for dealing with these items as they come forward. We did have an applicant come forward recently. We weren't armed with this type of framework. I think it would have been beneficial, and hopefully those applicants can come back. Now each side of the discussion knows exactly what is expected, the process to work through, and I think this will definitely serve our interests and applicants' interests going forward to make sure that things happen in a timely and informative manner. Happy to support this tonight, and thank you to staff for turning this around in what I think is a very quick timeline given the holiday schedule.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. Are there any further questions or comments? Councilor Lubertz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the first part of the option two, is to, we're asking to delete policy 9.3.2 of the official plan. I didn't have time to read that over. Can we just get an idea for the public as to what that is? What part of that, Paul, how that reads?
Mr. Brady?
Certainly. I can't give it to you verbatim, but that part of the official plan simply deals with solar panels, and it talks about energy conservation and the Green Energy Act. And therefore, we believe that the approach that we're going to be utilizing is desirable, but we don't want to have any inconsistencies between what's in the official plan right now and what we're proposing.
Okay, so we're not deleting the part that says the town encourages or supports alternative energy?
No, we're not.
No. Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Seeing none, all in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. We'll move on to PDS 05-2017, an amendment to Comprehensive Zoning Bylaw 129-90, Recreational Vehicle Regulations. Councilor Nutt, comments or questions? Councilor Nutt.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Matt Kernahan and Mr. Brady for working on this and putting this together. I just have one request, and that's under 6.39, Storage of Recreational Vehicles, paragraph D. Recreational vehicles may be stored in accordance with C above a maximum of 6 times per calendar year. I'd like to see that number increase to 12. Basically, if you go and come back, I'm assuming that going and coming back is one occurrence, going coming back is one occurrence. So if you bring it there after winter to prep it, then you basically only have another two opportunities to bring it back to your home, and that would include bring it back to winterize it. So if you went on three camping trips, one a month during June, July, and August, you basically would exceed the 6 times per calendar year.
You want to answer to that, Mr. Brady, before we go further?
Know that if council determines that they'd like vehicles that often to be parked temporarily, that's fine. We felt that 6 would be more than sufficient, but it's up to council.
Are there any further questions before I go back to Councilor Nutt? I beg your pardon? What paragraph was that again?
It's on page 5. It's point D, the 6.39, storage of recreational vehicles. It's D, it's the very last one.
D reads, recreational vehicles may be stored in accordance with C above a maximum of 6 times in a calendar year. It's my understanding that you would like that to be amended to 12 times.
So, Mr. Brady, let me ask this question then. If it's 6 times Do we count coming in and going out as one time?
No, we count a 72-hour period as one time.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Nutt?
Okay, can I just ask for clarification? Cause
absolutely.
Just for Mr. Brady, just based on what he just said, then if I bring it in, I have 72 hours, that's one. If I take it out and then come back again, that's a second instance. So if I bring it in and prep it for the season, that's one. I go on my first trip, come back, that's two. So is that's how it's intended to read? Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Are you okay with that, Mayor Redekop?
Yeah. Let me say, first of all, that I think 12 is probably excessive, but I don't agree, but I think the way this would be interpreted would be you take your trailer home to load it up to go on a vacation. Unless you're not going on a vacation for more than 4 days, when you leave, you're going to come back outside of that 4-day period. So when you come back to unload it, that's the second occasion. So that theoretically you're right. I believe that the way this would work is you bring your vehicle home in the spring, get it ready to go on your trip, come back. You've taken one trip, you've used two of your occasions. Could do three trips. That may not be enough. I think 12 may be too many, but that's the way I think it would be interpreted. So unless you're taking a very short trip within that 4-day span, you're gonna use up more than one of your occasions, I think. I had a couple of questions though, if I might.
Carry on.
While I've got the floor.
Yeah, go on.
So the concerns that I had really relate, and I did ask staff about this. I was very interested in the report that was done by Newmarket, because I thought they took a very interesting approach. Not only did they have some public meetings, but they also did a telephone survey, which I think would be quite helpful, because there would have been no particular interest that people might have when they received a telephone call. This would have been quite at random, whereas those attending the public meetings would undoubtedly be those who were very interested in what was happening. And when they did the online survey, again, it would be those probably who had the RVs who were quite interested in making sure that their interests were heard. That means that there were probably many people that should have, if they had concerns, expressed them but didn't. We did some public meetings, and we had some very articulate presentations made to us with respect to this issue, and certainly something that I hadn't thought about. The reality is that right now, on a large lot or an average lot in much of the town, people can store an RV in their driveway because they're going to be able to meet the setback requirements. That isn't a particular problem that I've been known to occur in the town where neighbors are concerned, but periodically it does arise. On a lot of the new subdivisions, these lots aren't going to be big enough in any event to store an RV for any length of time. There were a couple of things in the Newmarket report that I questioned staff about, and the first one had to do with these RVs are supposed to be licensed. I did ask staff about that. They said no, that might be a little overburdensome. But I'm wondering about trailers or the recreation vehicles that aren't defined as being skidoos or sea-doos or boats. What about the trailers? Is there any merit in having them requiring that they be licensed, and aren't they licensed to begin with?
Mr. Brady? All of those vehicles that you mentioned are licensed by the province. The question that I thought that you would ask me was whether or not the town should have a license, a specific licensing system for recreational vehicles, et cetera. It was under those circumstances that I suggested that for the town to do that, it would be quite expensive and very time-consuming.
Right. Thank you for the clarification. So, Mr. Chair, I guess my thinking was, should our bylaw require that they be licensed items, just like a motor vehicle is licensed. Should the RVs be licensed? Should that be one of the requirements, as it is, I think, in Newmarket?
Mr. Brady, any comment on that?
If the council wishes to add that, I don't have any issue with it. But these recreational vehicles, right from the very beginning, were ones that were going to be driven on the roads and utilized for vacationing. So perhaps it was an assumption on our part, but the idea is that these were to come in to be cleaned up, maintained, et cetera, and then put back out on the road. So the assumption was that they are licensed, because that's what they're being used for. They're being stored at some other facilities which are built for the long-term storage of these facilities. So I don't see any negatives associated with saying that they should be licensed, I believe that they are all licensed as we speak.
Right, so that if that becomes a problem, we could always amend the bylaw, I suppose. Correct?
You can always amend the bylaw.
The other real concern that I've got is, how are we going to enforce this? How are we actually really going to enforce this temporary storage 4 days? Who's going to start the clock? Who's going to end the clock? Who's going to be able to verify this, that, or the other thing?
Mr. Brady?
Through the mayor, the clock per se will start when a complaint is filed. So when someone phones in and says there's a recreational vehicle in such and such a driveway, it's been there for a month or whatever, or it's there and it shouldn't be there, or it's parking across the sidewalk, which is not permitted in this bylaw, then the clock starts. The bylaw enforcement officers would go out and take a look at the situation, and we would put a note that, this recreational vehicle is there. If after 72 hours it's still there, then the bylaw officers would be back to either ask them to move it or, more importantly, give them a ticket.
Okay. I'm going to support this, Mr. Chair. I can't say that I'm 100% confident that should, but I'm going to, because so far it hasn't been a problem, and I'm anticipating that it won't be a problem. But then again, I've been overly optimistic occasionally in the past. But I'm going to support this and trust that those individuals who have the need to use recreational vehicles will continue to use good judgment with respect to how they use them in their neighborhoods.
Thank you, Your Worship. Are there any further comments? Seeing none, all in favor? Do you want to come back to this, Councillor Knight? Okay, where you go.
Yeah, just hearing what Mr. Brady had to say and his interpretation of how this will be applied, and really trying to clear up the issue, newer subdivisions where this potentially could be a problem. I agree with the mayor. 12 probably is excessive after hearing Mr. Brady's explanation. But 6, so if I bring my vehicle home in May and I got to take it, I prep it and whatnot, that basically gives me one stop in June, one stop in July, one stop in August, and one stop in September, and one in October to winterize it. So I'm just thinking that during July and August, where there's heavier months, I just would like to hear what my fellow councillors have to say just about amending it possibly to 8.
Your Worship.
I'm thinking that we should probably adopt the recommendations made. If it becomes a problem, if there are users of recreational vehicles that find that this isn't broad enough, that they will come forward. I know that there's been some consultation with respect to this, and I don't believe that there's been an issue raised with respect to that point. So I'd be more inclined, just as I am with respect to whether it's necessary to license it or not. I'd be more inclined to see how the change to the zoning bylaw works. And if there are issues that arise, we can. That would be my approach.
Councillor Passero and then Councillor Lubitsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would support Councillor Nutt if he wanted to push it to 8. I think that would be a fair compromise. I don't think we're at the perfect situation yet, but we've gone from nothing to something, which is at least a starting point. I would support 8. The other comment I would make is that I'm not really willing to go any further than that. I understand the need for these vehicles. I understand the need for people's desire and love to have them. But at the end of the day, if that's the lifestyle you'd like to choose, you probably shouldn't be looking at a home that can't accommodate it at the rate that you'd like to have it. So I think this is a compromise. It's much better than what we had. Maybe it doesn't go as far as some people would need, but that's what a compromise is. So I would support 8 if Councillor Nutt brings it forward. Otherwise, I'm more than happy to go with this to start, and we'll see where it takes us. Thank you.
Councillor Lubitsch.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I kind of see where this is going, but having the bylaw being brought forward now and being allowed to work with it the way it is, I think it would be a good start for us. If I remember correctly, when the people were coming forward with the problem and asking that we create some kind of bylaw for their storage, the problem was is when they were bringing it in out of storage and then when they were putting it back into storage, because it takes a lot of time. But once you've winterized your vehicle or de-winterized your vehicle and now you're using it for the summer, going back and forth is just a matter of loading and unloading. So you're not going to be there for 72 hours, and I don't know that the neighbors are so much complaining about the fact that you're there for a couple hours loading up or unloading. So I would think let's see how it works. And again, we can always amend it to 8 if it doesn't work out for this season or next season.
Any further?
Nothing.
Councillor Nutt, did you want to? Oh, I'm sorry. Councillor Zanko.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that I do agree with the Mayor and Councillor Lubitsch. I get complaints from the opposite spectrum, so I'm much more comfortable with going with the 6 times per year, seeing how that plays out, and then perhaps reconsidering after.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Nutt?
Yeah, just my final comment is Councillor Passero is absolutely right. We had nothing. This is a starting point, so I'm okay with adopting it as it is, and we'll see where it goes, and if we have to revisit it in the fall, we will.
Okay, then. All in favor? Carried. Okay, so we'll move on to PDS 06-2017, the town initiated amendment to the comprehensive zoning bylaw number 129-90 to address impact of infill development and historic lot sizes at Crystal Beach. Do I get a mover? Councillor Lubitsch. Comments or questions? Councillor Lubitsch.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to get some clarification, what we're doing here is just for the general public so they have a good understanding of what's happening here. We have a lot of smaller lots in Crystal Beach, and what we're proposing to do here is allow homes to be built on them, but those homes would be subject to smaller sizes so that we're not getting these monster homes on these small lots. Is that correct, Mr. Brady?
Mr. Brady?
To Councillor Lubitsch, essentially, yes, the way we're dealing with that is by limiting, in particular, the height of the buildings so that they would be limited to a maximum height of 7.5 meters or 1.5 stories, which is the predominant pattern in the Crystal Beach.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any further comments or questions? Your Worship.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. We've had a series of reports here from the Planning Department, and both Mr. Kernahan and Mr. Hayworth are here. And I wanted to compliment them on the quality of the reports and the information that they've provided to us, because it's made it very easy for us to come to decisions with respect to these somewhat contentious issues periodically. So thank you.
Any further questions? All in favor? Opposed, abstaining, carried. Okay, so moving on to PDS 07-2017, an amendment to draft plan of subdivision, King Street draft plan of subdivision, northeast corner of King Street and Albany Street, roll number 2703-010-035-0100-0100-0000-1639-875, Ontario Limited, Frank Quay owner, James Hev agent. Mover? Councilor Passero. Any comments or questions? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was quite encouraged by the comments made by the applicant when he appeared before us before our holiday break. So I'm excited to see this going forward tonight and the concept plan in general taking fruition. It's been a long time coming, a lot of setbacks, a lot of hurdles, and hopefully we can get some movement on that property and the adjacent property in 2017. Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. Just one comment, Your Worship. We had a number of reports here today, and I know a lot of work went into those, and thank you all very much. They were all pretty comprehensive and very easy to read, which makes it even better. So thanks very much on that. I'll turn the chair back to you, Your Worship. Oh, I'm sorry. One more thing. Sorry. And this one, 193, PDS 08-2017, the Downtown Residential Parking Strategy, Official Plan and Zoning Bylaw Amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Your Worship?
Just had one question, and I had taken this up with Mr. Brady, and it had to do with the distinction between the municipal lots and the private lots that could be utilized by the commercial property owner for residential purposes. And it had to do with the municipal lots, and maybe Mr. Lustig has some comment on this as well. It's recommended that the municipal lots, there be a license or an agreement between the municipality and the property owner, whereas for the private lots, there was a recommendation that there be an easement granted over the parking lot in favor of the property owner or successor. And the question was, why is there that the distinction of that nature, insofar as in the future, if somebody who owns the commercial property with the residential use decides not to pay whatever the pay, how would we then enforce the bylaw?
Are you directing this to Mr. Lustig or Mr. Brady?
Well, Mr. Brady and I have had the correspondence about that, and he's probably the first one that can respond.
Okay, Mr. Brady?
Certainly. To the mayor, we feel that it's necessary to have the easement on the private lots to ensure that there is a legal mechanism by which that parking lot is attached, if you will, to the permission to create an apartment, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about when apartments are being created in the downtowns and the apartment owner is not having a parking space for that unit. So we're talking about how to accommodate it. So if it goes onto a private lot, then we want to have an easement over it so that we have a legal mechanism by ensuring that that's in keeping. We don't think it's necessary to have that same kind of protection over a municipal lot because the municipality owns the lot for starters, and the agreement that we've asked for would be between the apartment builder and hence the owner of the apartment moving forward and with the municipality. So we don't think it's necessary to have the same kind of protection because the municipality is in a position to be able to monitor it.
So in effect, we're actually making sure that in the private lot situation, both parties have some type of binding obligation to which there can be resort. In the case of the commercial property owner, they will have a legal right to utilize a portion of that parking lot premised on them paying whatever the annual fee is. And in the case of the municipality, we have the ability to ensure that both the commercial property owner will comply with the requirements of the zoning bylaw. And if not, then there are mechanisms that we can utilize to correct that. Plus, we also can be assured that there is, in fact, a dedicated parking spot available for each unit in the commercial premises.
Correct.
Thank you.
Anything further? All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carry. Are there any new business inquiries? Your Worship?
I had a question that I raised with Mr. Brady about large trees. There were several large trees that were cut down recently near the lakeshore in Fort Erie, presumably to make way for some construction of a residence. And we're losing a lot of large trees right now because of the emerald ash borer. And I know about a decade or so ago, maybe a little bit longer, there was consideration given to creating a bylaw that would require residents to seek municipal approval or regional approval to cut down trees on their property. That seemed to be a little overbearing in the sense that most property owners didn't want to be having to apply to the municipality just to cut down a small tree. But I'm wondering about large trees and if there's a mechanism other than a bylaw that the municipality could consider that might preserve some of these large trees, some of which are heritage trees in the sense that they are 100 years perhaps or even older. Are there mechanisms other than a bylaw dealing specifically with tree cutting?
Sure. To answer the mayor's question, yes, there is one method. We've utilized it recently with a ironwood tree on the battlefield in Ridgeway. That was the second tree in the Niagara region that was given a heritage status, the other one being the comfort maple. And certainly, if there are trees that are of that special magnitude, and they could be brought to the attention of the Municipal Heritage Committee, because it was the Municipal Heritage Committee that dealt with it when we dealt with the ironwood, and we could go out and it could be reviewed and it could be brought back. But in my humble opinion, we're talking about orders of magnitude 10 to 15 trees in the municipality that may fit into that kind of category, as opposed to every large tree that's on property in the municipality.
Thank you.
Anything further? Questions? That's fine. We'll move on to the business status report. Any comments or questions? You want new business? Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment. I know that we've received the decision from the Deputy Director of Titles over the absolute title application for the town of Fort Erie. And I just wanted to make a comment on the fact that after reading it through, it has been brought to everybody's attention that the town has not received absolute title. And in that document, there was a couple of things that were of some pretty contentious issues over the last term of council. And one of them was the road allowance, and the road allowance being Municipal Survey 751 road allowance, which in the report has been recognized as an unopened road. And the other issue that was in there, and we had some very heated discussions about, was the private road that was also part of the litigation. And although there were some things that were in there that
were in favor of the town. There were some things that were in favor of the objectors. I just wanted to comment on the fact that over that period of time, in the last term of council, there was four members of council that sat at this council chambers and were telling former staff members, which aren't here anymore, and council members, some that are here and some that are not here, that there was an issue with these here two items, the private road and the road loans. And in the ruling from the deputy director, we have been told that despite all of the distractions that we were subjected to, all of the lawsuits that we were subjected to, all the comments that were made about us, and the fact that people were trying to discredit us or assassinate our characters or ruin our reputations, the ruling came forward. We were right all the time. A lot of the things that were said personally to members of council, myself, and I see John Hill is here today, I see Paul Collard is here today, and Bob Steckley. And I just want to commend these gentlemen that sat on council with me at that time, because we took a pretty heavy hit for 4 years. And I want to commend these gentlemen for standing up for what they believed was right and never wavering on what they believed was in the best interest of the town of Fort Erie, in the best interest of the corporation, and the best interest of the people of Fort Erie. And even though I know that we're probably not going to receive any type of apology from anybody, I just want to acknowledge that you guys stood true to yourselves, and I want to congratulate you for the fine work that you did and standing up and making sure that what was right finally came to fruition. Thank you very much.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note that we are going into a closed session meeting to discuss the matter that Councilor Lubberts has raised, so I will await that closed session meeting to get a legal interpretation versus a colleague's interpretation of what has come down. Thank you.
Your Worship, I turn the chair over to you.
We do the business status report?
We did.
Then we went back to new business? Okay, infrastructure services, very light agenda, Councillor Zanko. Councillor Lubberts, you're the chair again. As of December. We're at infrastructure services, Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Infrastructure services is now in services. We have no presentations and we have no delegations. We have no reports. So that brings us to new business inquiries. Any new business, any inquiries by any members of council? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could just ask Mr. Walsh for a very brief update as to where we stand for water main breaks at this point in the season. We've had a number of freeze-thaw cycles, and although we don't have a lot of snow on the ground, temperature plays havoc with our pipes. Where do we sit right now? I commend the gentleman that we're working on Garrison Road by the Tim Hortons Wendy's the last couple of days. Absolutely brutal conditions to be doing the kind of work that they do. But where do we stand, and how do we look budget-wise compared to last year?
Mr. Wells?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had five breaks so far in 2017. That does not compare favorably to last year, where I don't think we had five breaks until the middle of February or so. But the weather has been colder, even though we haven't had as much snow. But it's sort of early in the winter to get to give a complete update. So I'd be happy to do that near the end of February and into March for you.
Councilor Passero, anyone else inquiries? Seeing none, business status report, any comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Lubberts. That then takes us to Corporate and Community Services, Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is now open. We have one presentation delegation tonight. Mr. Firetag, if you could please approach the podium.
Mayor Redicott, members of council, guests in town of Fort Erie. My name is Edward Firetag. I live at 4040 Far Avenue in Ridgeway. I'm here this evening representing the Crystal Ridge Community Center, Incorporated, on 99 Ridgewood South. As you may be well aware, this is the 20th year of operation for us. As a bit of background, in 1993, the Ridgeway Lions Club had outgrown its hall on Prospect Point Road North and decided to pursue the construction of a new hall attached to the West End Arena, as it was then known. Fundraising, donations, and bingo began in 1994. The Crystal Ridge Community Center Corporation was formed and issued its first registered charity information return on March the 19th, 1997. In the meantime, Pirano and Raimondo Associates Architects were retained. The present community center is evidence of our successful project that we are very proud of. What is the CRCC? The CRCC is a non-for-profit charitable corporation operated by community groups. It leases the community center next to the Crystal Ridge Arena at 99 Ridge Road in Ridgeway. This center was originally built and donated by the Ridgeway Lions Club in an agreement reached by the town in 1997. The majority of the board is represented by Ridgeway Lions. The remainder of the board consists of members from other community groups such as the Ridgeway Lioness and TASC that pay an annual membership. The Crystal Ridge Community Center is estimated to have over 100,000 uses per year by the community. We define a use as one person attending the CRCC for an event. The operating CRCC. The hall is operated as close to break even as possible. Any community group can become a member. Member's annual membership fee allows use of the director's room twice a month and use of the main hall three times a year for any function. Members also receive a storage area for their equipment. Members are expected to send representatives to the CRCC board. Other users pay a rental charge set and reviewed annually by the board. It is the objective of the board to maximize use by charging users reasonable fees that will help cover operating costs. In the past, while there have been operating deficits, they have been covered through loans by the Ridgeway Lions. The present amount of loans is $97,000. The Ridgeway Lions and Lioness have approximately 6,000 volunteer hours involved in the operation and care of the hall annually. Investments in Fort Erie by community center user groups, fostering more active lifestyles, ball hockey involving 400 children weekly, rentals of gym to adult groups for basketball, floor hockey, and exercise. Ridgeway Lioness, twice weekly yoga classes, fitness dance, rentals for exercise by dancing, twice weekly, building inclusive and engaged communities together. Rentals of TASC. TASC introduced a program in the performing arts that gave handicapped individuals an opportunity to embrace creativity and express themselves freely. TASC believes in communal support-oriented programs that encourage individuals to interact socially, which in turn will enhance friendships and instill awareness. The underlying idea of our organization is that therapy is isolation if ineffective. In fact, the sense of belonging to a community where members share interests, skills, and passions has proven to help people with disabilities develop lasting, nurturing relationships. TASC programs provide an environment in which children and adults will find the resources needed to grow socially and intellectually without being held back. Seniors' dinners held at the hall to promote socialization and interaction. Christmas dinner for those in need, held by Ridgeway Lions and community churches to support the needs of residents of Fort Erie. Senator Randall for local, provincial, and federal elections. Encouraging people to sustain healthy and sustainable environment. Red Cross blood banks use the hall quarterly. Flu shot clinics. Revenue Canada agency rentals for employee training and testing. Enriching people's lives through arts, cultural, and heritage. Dance studio recitals. Fashion shows by the Lioness. Graduation events held for local public and high schools, providing a local center to rent for weddings and special occasions with liquor licensing under the laws of Ontario, rendered by multiple entertainment uses for shows to the public. Community pasta, fish, roast beef, and chicken dinners held to benefit the community, supporting positive development of children and the youth. Use of the hall by Fort Erie Ball Hockey League, fundraising activities by Lions and the Lioness, stage presentations by Task Niagara, enhancing people's economic well-being through donations of food to needy collected at the hall, rentals that help stimulate the local economy, trade venture shows, motorcycle shows, Christmas shows by the Lioness. In the meantime, our expenses have increased substantially over the years, such as water rates were $2,286.92, natural gas $7,933.76, and electricity $11,257.20 for the year 2016. That is a total of $21,477.88. There are, of course, other costs, some of which are the alarms, the furnace and air conditioning, inspections, cleaning and insurance, etc. Therefore, we are requesting a grant of $25,000 from the Town of Fort Erie to continue our operation for this year. Thank you very much for allowing us this time. I would ask that the Crystal Ridge Board and Lioness stand and show their support for us here this evening. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Firetag. Are there any questions or comments from council? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Firetag, and your supporters for being here tonight. My question is regarding you had titled it an operating grant. So this would be strictly for 2017 to help with the cash flow, or is this money being targeted towards a specific purchase or investment?
For this year, for our operating budget, yes.
My second question would be, what do we do in 2018? What is the assurance that we won't be sitting here 12 months from now? Do you have future plans to bridge that gap? What does the cash flow look like going forward?
Well, we're not discussing it from that point of view. What we are discussing is there will be discussions between Crystal Ridge Board and the Town of Fort Erie as to what the contract will look like from September, I believe it is, forward, 2017.
Yeah. So the $25,000 then is just to meet your basic expenses to keep the doors open, the lights on, to get us through 2017 until more permanent arrangements could be discussed.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for your time tonight.
Are there any other questions or comments from any other councillors? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Not a question, but thank you very much, Mr. Firetag, for being here, and thank you very much to all the Lions for all the work that they do. I travel back and forth through Ridgeway and Crystal Beach a lot, and I've always seen that there's lots of activity around the community center, and I know the challenges that the Lions went through to get that community center built. So I'd just like to thank the Lions for doing the job that they do in the town of Fort Erie, and I'll be supporting the request from the Lions for this year. Thank you very much.
Are there any other comments or questions? Seeing none, we'll move to 10.2, which is reports. Can I have a mover for CS-01-2017? It's moved by Councillor Zanko. That report is on the floor to be discussed. Comments or questions, Your Worship?
I did have some questions with respect to this, and I raised them with Mr. Cook. I also spoke to Mr. Mather, who was involved in this matter. And the question really was relative to why we would, though I see that the recommended contractor, POMAX, is slightly higher than the runner-up Apex. It's about a 50% increase or 50% more that POMAX do this org review than Apex. And I'm just wondering whether there's any significant reason as to what, it's actually not 50%, it's less than that, but it's 38,000 to 50,000. Just wondering if there's any specific reason why we should follow the recommendation of POMAX as opposed to Apex Pro.
Mr. Cookett?
Through the chair to the councillor, or sorry, to the worship. Just a little history on this process for an RFP. When we require the works of a consultant, we put out a proposal which scopes out the work that's required. They make a submission, and it's basically what we call a two-envelope submission. So the first is their proposal, which we evaluate and then rate it compared to the other submissions. That's what was done in this case. We had three staff members evaluate the first submission. We felt that the recommended consultant provided exactly what we had scoped out in the proposal. They have a lot of experience. They have three senior staff members who are fire chiefs or have been fire chiefs with over 55 years of experience. So all that said, they did rate much higher in the proposal. The second envelope is the price. In this particular case, the price was weighted at 10%. So we didn't put a lot of weight on the price because we were looking at a proposal that met the needs that we were looking for this org review. So that's the approach that we took, and that's why the recommendation is what you see here. The difference is $12,000. It was close in the scoring. There was, like I say, three staff members, one being myself, one the former fire chief, and the other is the manager of employment services.
Can I bang away a bit more at this?
Yes, Your Worship.
I noticed that there was 90% for the technical aspect, 10% for the cost aspect. Is that typical? Isn't the breakdown usually something different than that?
Through your chair to the worship, it varies on the type of work that we're looking to have done on the proposal. In this particular case, we wanted to make sure that the consultant was providing us what we needed. It wasn't about the price. I mean, a consultant could come in with a very low price, but at the end of the day, if they're not providing what you're looking for, it's a waste of money. So in this particular case, we rated it 90-10. Like I say, it varies on the type of work that we're sending out for proposals.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
You may.
So the technical scoring on this is very close, 837 out of 900 to 807. And I appreciate that POMAX has the personnel that you've referred to. And I guess I'll leave it at, the other thing that I noticed is POMAX didn't actually come in at the budgeted amount that presumably was outlined in the RFP. In other words, we had $50,000 that we were contemplating spending, and POMAX didn't come in at that amount. Is that a concern at all?
Through your chair to the mayor, you are correct. We did spell out a maximum amount that was to be submitted. There are $717.18 above that. typically that isn't favorable for them, but we thought that it was so close to the upset limit that we would accept it and just felt that their proposal was worth it.
Your Worship.
I'm going to support this. I'm concerned about the scoring. Concerned about the fact that we're going with the responder to the RFP that exceeded the amount that we had delineated. But I'm going to accept the proposition that our staff, which I have a lot of confidence in, would not be making this recommendation to us unless they felt very strongly about the recommendation. The report does indicate that we could go with either, and I'm very much tempted to think that we probably should have gone or could go with Apex, but I'm going to despite my Scottish heritage, I'm going to go with the recommendation of staff, and that's a personal tribute to my confidence in our staff.
The chair will go to Councillor Lubitz, then Councillor Passero.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm just thinking that maybe we can make a recommendation for future, and knowing a little bit about the tendering process, sometimes when certain things aren't met in the proposals, when they open the envelopes, some tenders are just set aside because they didn't meet the requirements of the proposal. And here's a situation where we didn't meet the requirements of the budgeted number, but our budgeted number is a pretty strict number. We can't we can't change that because that's what was approved by council. And I'm just wondering if in the future, when we're looking at these types of things, if there's a variable, maybe a 1 or 2% variable when we budget that, because then you can go ahead and say, well, if you're within the 2%, yes, we can accept it. For this case here, it's $717 out of a $50,000 budget, which I would accept myself. But given the parameters, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. I'm just wondering maybe in the future if we do that on future budgets like this.
Through you, Chair, to the Council. That's definitely something we can look at in the future. Yep.
Thank you. The Chair recognizes Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be supporting staff's recommendation as well. We've had instances in the past where every proponent comes in over budget, and it's just recognition that we missed something. The pricing was off. Something had changed in the marketplace. Timing varied, and in that case, we put it back. I don't have any issue with the 717-18. To me, it's refreshing that a group would actually give us their actual cost to do the work. I'd rather have that than a group come in at $49,995, knowing that we have a $50,000 budget, and then they either cut corners, we don't get what we were looking for, or they nickel and dime us somewhere along the way to make up the difference. So, you know, council has the choice. This is what a leading group is telling us would be their cost to do the work that we're asking. Staff is telling me that they're the group that is going to do the work that we were asking, so I'm prepared to support that tonight. It doesn't always look great in the newspapers, but we're not always here to do what looks great in the newspapers, so I'll support staff's recommendation.
Is there any other comments or questions? Can I just ask that, can I pass the chair to Councillor McDermott, who hasn't spoken yet? I'd like to speak.
Councillor Knott.
Thank you. So last year we had two bids on the asphalt patching contract. So I'd like Mr. Lustig's opinion as to if this opens up the town to any liability by choosing someone that's not the lowest price.
Mr. Lustig.
The real issue is in these kinds of cases has to do with the integrity of the bidding system rather than whether or not you're exposed to a lawsuit. I don't think you'd be exposed to a lawsuit, but you want to, I think the comments that have been made about looking into changing this are good comments because you want to avoid people thinking that integrity of the bidding system isn't completely right, shall we say. So I don't think there's a legal liability here, if that's what your question is, but I do think that it makes sense to look into the suggestions that are being put forward.
Thank you, Mr. Lutzik. Are there any more comments or questions? All in favor? Opposed, if any?
Chair back.
Mr. Councillor Knott.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. So we'll move on to CS-02-2017. Can I have a mover? So moved by His Worship. That report is on the floor and open for discussion, comments, or questions. Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the report, staff makes reference as to their desire for options to have it registered on title, what can and cannot be registered on title, and I just wanted assurance that what is talked about in the body of the report is encompassed in the recommendations that we're looking to approve and that staff are comfortable going forward in this manner.
Mr. Cookett.
Through you, Chair of the Councillor. I'll speak to it, and Mr. Lustig may want to add something to it. In this particular case, we're asking for the there's an encroachment on town property, and we're asking Council to waive the policy in regards to the submission or the reference plan being registered on title. In this particular case, we're asking for a notice. There again, that will be registered, but there will not be the cost to prepare a reference plan as is indicated in our policy. I don't know if Mr. Lustig wants to add to that.
No, I think that the report indicates that the perfect situation would be to have the reference plan, but there's a cost involved in that, and that's not what the council decided to do in a previous case, which is why I think this report follows the council's decision in the previous case. But as far as any problems for the municipality, I don't foresee any.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Any opposed? None opposed? That carries. We'll move on to 10.3, new business or inquiries. Councillor Luberts, and then Councillor Passero.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back to the presentation by Mr. Firetag and request that their grant be included in our supplementary budget items. We need a motion for that? For a motion?
I believe the clerk would like a motion for that.
Yeah, I'd like to make that motion then.
Can I just ask for a clarification on one point? That would you be that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yep, definitely. So you're going to move that motion?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Can you just state the motion for?
Yeah, me? I'll move the motion that we recommend to our financial director that he include $25,000 grant funding for, would it be the Ridgeway Lions or Crystal Ridge Community Center? Crystal Ridge Community Center.
Crystal Ridge Community Center. Okay. That motion is on the floor. Comments or questions? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to do that as well, so you can disregard my previous hand raising. But I just wanted to add that for the benefit of CRCC, that this motion would mean that we will deliberate this come budget time. So the approval of this motion tonight is not the $25,000, but it will form a part of our discussion for budget a couple weeks from now. And just adding on to that, I think this is a serious conversation that our council will have, not just on this item, but others. Many of these facilities were built when bingos were at an all-time high, and now the piper is coming to be paid as far as maintaining these facilities, replacing these facilities, because the bingo funds are no longer there. So I do view our discussions with CRCC as setting a precedent and a premise for other conversations that we're going to have with other organizations that have been kind enough to do this in the past, but just no longer have the funds to keep them operating or set funds aside for their eventual replacement. They do provide great things for the community. I don't know what we'd do without them. And at some point, we're going to have to look at absorbing some of those costs in order for them to continue. So I look forward to that discussion come budget. Thank you to Councillor Lubberts for putting that forward.
Okay, are there any other comments or questions? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor of Councillor Lubberts' motion? That passes, none opposed.
And I just assume, Madam Clerk, that you've noted my conflict with respect to that.
Well said, Your Worship. Moving on to 10.4, Business Status Report. Are there any comments or questions on the Business Status Report? Seeing none, I'll close Corporate Services and turn the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. Are there any meetings that anyone wishes to advise us about in the upcoming meetings? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. With your indulgence, just an event that's coming up that's a highlight for our community, and it's the Bowl for Kids' Sake for Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And this year it's happening on March 11th. I'll be speaking with the clerk tomorrow through email, requesting an opportunity for a delegation at the regular council meeting for myself and a member of the Big Brothers, Big Sisters executive, and would look forward to council's participation once again and hopefully staff's participation as well. So that's March 11th, two time slots, 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., and always a fun time for a great cause. Look forward to having everybody's participation.
Can I just say, Councillor Passero, that stresses me because the long-standing trophy that we have won may be in jeopardy because I'm not going to be here on March the 11th.
So you're saying donations may be down, but scores may be up.
Yes, precisely. And fewer people injured on the bowling alley. Yeah. Well, I suppose I can always make my donation without being there. So maybe there's actually a silver lining inside the silver. Yeah, win-win for everyone. Any other meetings? Then Councillor McDermott.
I have a meeting tomorrow, the Fort Erie Library Board.
And what time is that? Is that 5?
5 o'clock.
At the library. There are no other meetings. Councillor Nutt, would you like to move to adjourn this committee meeting?
Yes, Your Worship. The Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns council and committee meeting at 7:18 p.m.
All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried.